In a small, smoky Harlem club in 1939, Billie Holiday stepped onto the stage and silenced the room with Strange Fruit, her haunting protest against lynching. The song transformed her from entertainer to activist overnight. Yet Holiday wasn't the first Black woman to use music as resistance. She stood on the shoulders of blues pioneers like Gertrude Ma Rainey and Bessie Smith, who had been articulating feminist consciousness and challenging racial oppression through their art since the 1920s. Angela Davis's groundbreaking work, Blues Legacies and Black Feminism, has become required reading for artists from Beyoncé to Janelle Monáe, who cite it as inspiration for their own politically charged music. When Mamie Smith's Crazy Blues sold 75,000 copies in its first month in 1920, at $1 each, an astronomical sum for mostly poor Black purchasers, it revealed an untapped market that would forever change American music and create space for Black women's voices in popular culture. When Mamie Smith recorded Crazy Blues in 1920, she ignited a cultural revolution. The record's unprecedented success, selling 75,000 copies in its first month at $1 each, revealed an untapped Black market that recording companies rushed to exploit. During the 1920s classic blues era that followed, hundreds of women recorded their work, establishing a feminist musical tradition that would shape American popular culture for generations. The commercial success of women blues singers wasn't coincidental. Between 1923 and 1926, when Bessie Smith and Ma Rainey first recorded, record companies primarily signed women artists, believing they would appeal to Black audiences. When male country blues caught on in 1926, women were gradually marginalized, especially after the 1929 market crash devastated the recording industry. Despite their brief commercial ascendancy, these women produced a vast musical legacy that articulated experiences of freedom that powerfully demonstrated slavery's end. What made women's blues revolutionary was their bold contradiction of mainstream ideological assumptions about women, love, and sexuality. Unlike European-American popular songs that idealized romantic love within domestic spheres, reinforcing women's confinement to the home, blues represented sexuality differently. For recently emancipated Black Americans, freely chosen sexual love mediated between historical disappointment and new social realities. As Ralph Ellison noted, blues had the capacity to make the details of sex convey meanings which touch on the metaphysical. The scarcity of references to marriage and domesticity in women's blues is striking. Their protagonists were seldom wives and almost never mothers. In 252 songs recorded by Smith and Rainey, only 4, all by Smith, reference marriage neutrally. This absence doesn't reject motherhood, but suggests blues women found the mainstream cult of motherhood irrelevant to their lives. Ma Rainey often repudiated monogamous marriage with an attitude typically gendered as male. In Blame It on the Blues, she refuses to privilege marriage over non-marital partnerships. In Shaven Dry, she sings about involvement with a married man without apology. These representations reflected Black women's economic independence, which they needed for survival, and challenged dominant white cultural conceptions of marriage and domesticity. When Smith contrasts culture's perceptions of marriage in Sam Jones' blues, she musically highlights the clash between white ideals and Black realities, evoking affirming responses from female audiences who recognize their relative emancipation from marriage's confining ideological constraints. In the blues tradition, women singers like Ma Rainey and Bessie Smith provided powerful examples of Black female independence, refusing to accept resignation as the appropriate response to heartbreak. While many songs address rejection and unfaithful lovers, the emotional stance is predominantly one of assertiveness and defiance. Smith's first recording, Downhearted Blues, ends with the bold declaration, "I got the world in a jug, the stopper's in my hand. I'm gonna hold it until you men come under my command," a feminist contestation of patriarchal control. These blues women's representations of sexual relationships avoid sentimentality, instead embracing unadorned realism that acknowledges both desire and its complications. Their music bears witness to the contradictory demands placed on Black American women, who faced ideological expectations of domesticity from dominant culture, while their lived post-slavery experiences rendered such assumptions incongruous. The blues women boldly challenged gender norms, with Bessie Smith's confrontation of the Ku Klux Klan serving as a powerful example. When Klansmen disrupted her tent performance, she fearlessly confronted them, shouting obscenities until they retreated, then returned to her performance as if she had just settled a routine matter. These blues women introduced what Daphne Duval Harrison calls a new, different model of Black women, more assertive, sexy, sexually aware, independent, realistic, complex, alive. They interpreted Black experience from their unique perspective, as women who weren't protected by bourgeois ideology, who faced injustice and abuse but refused to be silenced. Ida Cox's Wild Women Gon' Have the Blues became the quintessential portrait of the non-conforming woman, proclaiming, "You never get nothing by being an angel child. You'd better change your ways and get real wild." Similarly, Bessie Smith's Easy Come, Easy Go Blues presents a woman who refuses to be devastated by a man's mistreatment. Ma Rainey's Prove It On Me Blues boldly flaunted her lesbianism, declaring, "They must have been women, 'cause I don't like no men," and "Wear my clothes just like a fan, talk to the gals just like any old man." This represented what Sandra Lieb called a powerful statement of lesbian defiance and self-worth, anticipating the lesbian cultural movement of the 1970s. Blues songs addressing homosexuality simply named these realities without moral condemnation. These blues women redefined women's place by refusing to romanticize relationships and instead exposing contradictions and forging images of tough, resilient, independent women unafraid of vulnerability or of demanding respect. Blues women offered practical advice to female audiences about relationships with men. In Bessie Smith's Pinchback Blues, she warns women against sweet men who don't work, directly advising her audience, "Get a working man when you marry, and let all these sweet men be." This advice carries class consciousness, urging identification with working class values and resistance to parasitic men who rely on charm. Ironically, Smith's only film appearance in the 1929 St. Louis Blues cast her as a woman who ignored such advice, portraying a character exploited by a handsome pinchback who steals her money. The film violated blues discourse by leaving the victimized woman in absolute despair, contradicting the spirit of women's blues, which always offers recourse through an imagined community of supportive women. Blues women created this sense of community through songs addressing female audiences directly. In A Good Man Is Hard to Find, Smith offers collective advice about handling relationships. Other songs establish intimacy by posing questions like Rainey's, "Did you ever wake up with your good man on your mind?" Smith's version of Moonshine Blues specifically addresses girls rather than folks, explicitly seeking solace from women rather than the Lord. These performances functioned like consciousness-raising sessions, with songs like I Used to Be Your Sweet Mama creating rehearsal spaces for women to practice assertiveness. I ain't gonna let no man worry me sick or turn this hair of mine gray. Such performances likely received enthusiastic testifying from female audience members. This working-class women's blues community defended their names and dignity differently than middle-class Black club women, who often disassociated themselves from blues culture while assuming missionary roles to introduce true womanhood to their less fortunate sisters. While club women achieved important victories against racism, they operated on ideological terrain that assumed the inferiority of poor and sexually assertive women. Women's blues demonstrated that working-class women could defend their dignity both against white racism and male dominance within Black communities. Blues performances created spaces where Black working-class women could recognize social sources of their experiences and engage aesthetically with ideas beyond real-life possibilities. Travel emerged as a powerful imaginary theme in women's blues, with freedom of movement representing a psychologically dramatic manifestation of freedom for African Americans after emancipation, as Lawrence Levine observed. while newly freed male slaves experienced geographical and psychological expansion, women typically remained confined by domestic duties. This gendered pattern established male travel as normative within African American communities, with wandering men carrying guitars and banjos becoming the foundation of country blues. As Ben Sidran noted, the traveling musician became the ultimate symbol of freedom, representing escape from static hopelessness of black employment. Ma Rainey, who toured with groups like the Rabbit Foot Minstrels, fundamentally challenged social expectations for women through her extensive travels. Her performances invited female audiences to glimpse possibilities of equaling men in freedom of movement. Rainey's songs like Traveling Blues, Walking Blues, and Runaway Blues featured female subjects who weren't passive when men departed, but instead became travelers themselves. For women especially, travel implied autonomy and control over their circumstances, particularly their sexual lives. The railroad tracks represented concrete evidence of something different somewhere else. When Rainey performed Traveling Blues, she dramatized travel by appearing on stage with a suitcase, deliberately evoking envy. You could just see them jigs wanting to go someplace else. These performances powerfully refuted the blues cliché that when a man gets the blues, he hops a train and rides, when a woman gets the blues, she lays down and cries. This musical representation of female mobility connected to the spiritual's travel themes but re-articulated them as individualized, secularized, and sexualized journeys. Women's blues challenged domestic confinement, offering aesthetic possibilities of rebellion and self-determination even when actual circumstances limited women's physical mobility. In House Rent Blues, Smith continues her powerful social commentary by weaving together the harsh realities of impending homelessness with sexual politics. The protagonist, facing eviction on a cold, dark, and stormy night, pleads with a potential lover to put your woman outdoors to provide her shelter. This complex interplay reveals how personal relationships in blues discourse function both literally and as metaphors for unrealizable social aspirations. The blues aesthetic refuses to be governed by mainstream American symbolic conventions, creating space for protest within seemingly personal narratives. Other Smith songs, like I'm Down in the Dumps and Baby Won't You Please Come Home, similarly intertwine economic hardship with sexual relationships, showing how landlords' demands for rent payments complicate already difficult romantic circumstances. The blues idiom demands absolute honesty in portraying black life, recognizing no taboos. Whatever reflects working-class African-American realities belongs in blues discourse, regardless of moral judgments from dominant culture or the black bourgeoisie. Ma Rainey's Hustlin' Blues portrays a prostitute seeking to escape her pimp's exploitation through the legal system. The song reveals profound racial contradictions as the black woman stands between a white male symbol of power, the judge, and a black male purveyor of abuse, her pimp. This tragic positioning invites audiences to critique how racism compounds gender exploitation, as the woman will likely be jailed rather than protected. Other Smith songs, like I'm Down in the Dumps and Baby Won't You Please Come Home, similarly intertwine economic hardship with sexual relationships, showing how landlords' demands for rent payments complicate already difficult romantic circumstances. The blues idiom demands absolute honesty in portraying black life, recognizing no taboos. Whatever reflects working-class African-American realities belongs in blues discourse, regardless of moral judgments from dominant culture or the black bourgeoisie. Ma Rainey's Hustlin' Blues portrays a prostitute seeking to escape her pimp's exploitation through the legal system. The song reveals profound racial contradictions as the black woman stands between a white male symbol of power, the judge, and a black male purveyor of abuse, her pimp. This tragic positioning invites audiences to critique how racism compounds gender exploitation, as the woman will likely be jailed rather than protected. Bessie Smith's masterpiece, Backwater Blues, emerged from witnessing Southern black communities devastated by flooding. released during the catastrophic 1927 Mississippi River floods that displaced over 600,000 people, more than half black, the song captured collective suffering intensified by racism. While natural disaster affected everyone, black communities were deliberately sacrificed to protect white areas, with flood victims subjected to forced labor, extortion, and violence. Relief services freely provided to whites required payment from destitute black victims, forcing them into debt peonage. The tremendous popularity of backwater blues and similar songs demonstrates how blues transformed individual tragedies into collective cultural consciousness. These songs preserved historical memory while creating metaphors of oppression that forged community through shared understanding. Even when not explicitly political, blues songs like Ma Rainey's Blame It on the Blues employed coded protest techniques inherited from slave music. When Rainey's protagonist exhaustively investigates her personal relationships for the source of her troubles but finds no one to blame except the blues, her black audiences would understand this as an indictment of the unnamed but omnipresent white man, the racist structure of society ultimately responsible for their collective suffering. Blues women used their music as both spiritual practice and emotional liberation, creating a powerful avenue for personal and communal healing. Songs like Yada Do and Yodeling Blues demonstrate the self-conscious power of blues to exercise emotional pain. I'm gonna yodel, yodel my blues away. This reflects a fundamental principle. Blues are sung to drive the blues away. Through the act of confronting, acknowledging, and naming their suffering through song, performers created an aesthetic means of expelling pain while transforming it into art. The blues represented collective community struggles while providing women rare vehicles for expressing their intimate experiences and deepest emotions. Songs like Memphis Bound Blues showed how music could transform self-destructive emotions into expressive freedom. I talk because I'm stubborn, I sing because I'm free. The socializing character of blues transformed individual pain into collective experience, as exemplified in Last Minute Blues, which memorialized countless nameless women suffering. These songs gave voice to experiences of domestic violence, economic hardship, sexual exploitation, and racial discrimination that were otherwise silenced in public discourse. Women like Ma Rainey and Bessie Smith presided over blues gatherings with extravagant performances that combined theatrical spectacle with raw emotional power. They wore elaborate costumes with headdress with 1,000 feathers and adorned themselves with pearls, gold, and rhinestones, visual symbols of success that challenged prevailing racial and gender hierarchies. Their stage presence commanded attention and respect, creating spaces where black women could be celebrated as artists and cultural leaders. Beyond performance, these pioneering artists managed the complex business of touring shows, booking venues, paying musicians and dancers, handling transportation, and navigating the dangerous Jim Crow South. They built independent economic enterprises at a time when few women, especially black women, had access to business ownership. In an era where the church provided the main autonomous social space for African Americans, these blues women carved out new community spaces through tent shows in the South and clubs in the North. Their performances created secular gathering places that affirmed black culture while powerfully contesting the male dominance of the black church. The spiritual dimension of blues performance created alternative sacred spaces outside traditional religious institutions. Through call and response patterns, physical movement, and emotional catharsis, blues performances echoed religious practices while creating new forms of spiritual expression. These gatherings allowed for both individual testimony and collective healing, transforming personal struggles into shared experience and resistance. Bessie Smith became a central figure in the Harlem Renaissance, though largely through the patronage of white enthusiasts like Carl Van Vechten. Van Vechten collected boxes and boxes of Smith's records and introduced them to European visitors, yet his appreciation was steeped in racist assumptions. He described Smith as having a wild, rough, Ethiopian voice that sounded as if it had been developed at the sources of the Nile, revealing his exoticization of Black culture even as he admired her talent. Though he considered her crude and primitive compared to the more refined Ethel Waters, Van Vechten's photographs of Smith a year before her death provide what he called the only adequate record of her true appearance. The Harlem Renaissance's Black intellectuals largely undervalued blues and jazz, with Houston Baker noting there was no Harlem Renaissance until after the event. While Baker recognizes the importance of the deformative folk sound in Black modernism, his analysis still treats music primarily as literary material, rather than acknowledging the artistic agency of blues women themselves. Most Renaissance intellectuals, except Langston Hughes, approached Black music with ambivalence, appreciating its cultural vitality while hoping it would be elevated to European high art standards. Elaine Locke explicitly stated that, though we may be a musical people, we have produced few, if any, great musicians. Meanwhile, as Harlem intellectuals debated these issues, the recording industry was capitalizing on blues women's talents, beginning with Mamie Smith's wildly successful Crazy Blues in 1920. Even Black Swan Records, founded to showcase Black musical talent with W.E.B. Du Bois on its board, rejected Bessie Smith for Ethel Waters, whose style seemed more compatible with popular white singers. This contradiction revealed how efforts to assert African-American identity were often compromised by uncritical acceptance of elitist cultural values. Billie Holiday's remarkable ability to appropriate inconsequential Tin Pan Alley love songs and transform them into complex emotional explorations had profound social implications. Though she referred to herself as a race woman with connections to political movements, critics have largely neglected the politics of her music. Holiday's transformative aesthetic process illuminated ideological constructions of gender in women's emotional lives. Using Herbert Racuse's concept of the aesthetic dimension, we can see how Holiday's art transcended social determinations, creating a realm where subversion becomes possible. Rather than viewing this as a solitary artistic achievement, Holiday's aesthetic dimension drew from and contributed to African-American musical history, where women's political agency nurtures aesthetic agency. Holiday transformed the often mediocre Tin Pan Alley material she was forced to record. Like enslaved Africans who transformed English to meet their cultural needs, Holiday reworked commercial songs, incorporating her battle against cultural oppression into every phrase. This approach reflects the Black American tradition of creatively reworking language to speak the unspeakable, continuing the encoded communication that began with field hollers and spirituals. Despite working with discarded, sometimes ridiculous tunes chosen by recording companies for jukeboxes in Black urban areas, Holiday created gems like You Let Me Down, transforming cliched images into critiques of their own content. Her performances exposed the ideological content of songs while hinting at historical disappointments, inviting listeners to reflect on personal and political grievances. Holiday's songs were subversive in offering Black audiences special insights about the dominant culture. Unlike Rainey and Smith, who concentrated on Black cultural creations, Holiday boldly entered the domain of white popular culture, revealing to Black listeners the consciousness of love and sexuality overdetermined by ideologies of male dominance. The rising Black middle class could hear in her performances a warning to proceed with caution lest they become disoriented in culturally alienating forms. Her ability to negotiate entrance into dominant culture without disconnecting from her people allowed her to communicate critical social meanings across racial and class boundaries. Davis challenges critics who prefer the young Holiday's up-tempo buoyancy to her mature work, arguing they fail to recognize how her art became increasingly communicative even as her technical skills waned. Her later performances expressed complex social and psychological messages whose seeds were evident in her golden years. Songs like Some Other Spring, Holiday's favorite, demonstrate an impassioned, utopian quality, affirming Eros as a potentially transformative force, resonating with Audre Lorde's theory of the erotic as power. Holiday could sing with prophetic conviction about love's transformative power because it represented what she couldn't achieve in her own life, continuing the blues tradition of representing love and sexuality as both daily experience and coded yearning for social liberation.
Strange Fruit, which Holiday called her personal protest against racism, transformed her status in American popular culture. Though only 24 when she recorded it in 1939, the song established her as a pivotal figure addressing racial injustice through music. Despite her desire for commercial success, Holiday chose this politically charged song that seemed likely to damage her career. She had achieved recognition among musicians but craved wider public acclaim, telling Downbeat magazine she would quit the singing game if she failed to gain national prominence by age 26. At Cafe Society, the interracial Greenwich Village nightclub where she premiered the song, Holiday worked like the devil on it to communicate its profound meaning to nightclub audiences. By making Strange Fruit central to her repertoire as her signature work, Holiday pioneered a tradition later embraced by musicians like Nina Simone, who incorporated explicit social critiques into their music. Holiday's extraordinary interpretive capabilities blended with her consciousness as a Black woman to create a challenging brand of popular music that would echo across genres and generations. Strange Fruit stood out dramatically from her other work, pricking the collective conscience of listeners and reaffirming to her musical colleagues the importance of using their medium in the quest for social justice. Holiday followed in the footsteps of predecessors like Ma Rainey and Bessie Smith, who had incorporated critical social consciousness into their music against the conventions of the dominant culture. She serves as a bridge between past and present, connecting the classic blues of Bessie Smith to contemporary artists like Tracy Chapman and Erykah Badu. Chapman is known for her socio-political songs, while Badu, often compared to Holiday for her phrasing, represents the continuing legacy of Lady Day in Black popular culture. The tradition established by these blues women, using music as a vehicle for social commentary, feminist consciousness, and cultural resistance, continues to resonate in contemporary music. From Nina Simone's civil rights anthems to Beyoncé's Formation, from Janelle Monáe's Afrofuturist critiques to Lizzo's body positive anthems, today's Black women artists continue to use music as both personal expression and political intervention. In doing so, they honor the legacy of Rainey, Smith, and Holiday, women who transformed American music while creating spaces for Black feminist consciousness to flourish against tremendous odds.